in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, all happened in the motorcade route.
Who controls the past? Controls the future. Who controls the present? Controls the past.
The death of bin Laden marks the most significant achievement to date in our nation's effort to defeat al-Qaeda.
All you got to do is start looking around, start thinking for yourself, start investigating things, and you will see it all right there. So you have the power. Humanity has the power. We have the power. Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
As for me, give me liberty or give me death!
The answer to 1984 is 1776.
Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Jakari Jackson. It is May 9th, 2013, and here are our top stories.
Tonight, breaking news from the State Department as the 3D printable gun is ordered to be shut down. Meanwhile, in Seattle, over 700 firearms collected by the gun buyback program are set to be melted down and turned into plaques inscribed with children's peaceful messages. Then, another CNN hoax is revealed as news anchors try to pretend they are not in the same parking lot.
Boy, did I almost look stupid.
All that and more up next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
And welcome back. Top story headline, breaking 3D printable gun order to shut down by government. Now, this is a story that broke today on the Alex Jones Show. Cody Wilson called into our show and he said, hey, I got this letter. If we can put that letter on the screen for our viewers, this is the letter that I was sent saying that I need to shut my site down or at least remove certain aspects of the site. And we'll get more into this a little bit later because Cody will actually be joining us in our third segment. So stay tuned for that. It's breaking news that you do not want to miss. Now we'll move on now to the Benghazi front. Headline, Benghazi whistleblower, I've been demoted for challenging Susan Rice's claim. Now, you can see it right here. Gregory Hicks, former deputy chief of mission in Benghazi, told Congress today that the State Department officially began criticizing his job performance and that he was ultimately demoted after he asked why the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Susan Rice, attributed the Benghazi attack to the anti-Islamic YouTube video. You guys remember that stupid video. Hicks told the committee, I've effectively been demoted from deputy chief of mission to desk officer. They've been trying to silence these hearings. They pushed it back. I think it was on C-SPAN to C-SPAN 2, then C-SPAN 3. I don't even know where it's at now. But try to keep up with the Benghazi hearings the best you can. We'll move on now to our next story. Seattle to melt gun buyback firearms into peace plaques. Okay, let's see what they have to say. After collecting over 700 firearms at the Seattle Police Department's gun buyback program last January, Mayor Mike McGinn announced Tuesday that the firearms would be melted down and turned into plaques inscribed with children's, quote, peaceful messages. Despite the failure of SPD's last gun buyback program in 1992 and several studies showing gun buyback programs to be nothing more than political theater, the city of Seattle, in response to the school shootings in Newtown, Connecticut, set up yet another gun buyback program. Now, I'm not exactly sure how they run their operation in Seattle, but we showed you the story, I believe it was, you know, just 2 or 3 weeks ago, how in Arizona, they take the guns from the gun buybacks and then resell them. Because you would think that they would destroy these firearms, but not in Arizona. They give you a $50 gift card for you. Let's say you got a $3,000 M4 real tricked out. You should go turn it in for maybe $100, maybe $200. They give you this little dinky gift card, and they go resell it to somebody else. So they don't even destroy it, or they keep it for themselves, which has often proved to be the case. And speaking of gun buybacks, this is something we got off our tip line. Guns for groceries, or groceries for guns, should I say. Now, this is something I want to point out. If you are in the city of Detroit, May 18th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., you can go to the New St. Paul Tabernacle Church of God in Christ. It is 15340 Southfield Service Drive in Detroit, Michigan. You can go turn in your gun for a dinky $50 gift card, or if you've got a little bit of cash on you, I'm sure you can go $100, $200, $300 at the most and get yourself a nice Carbon 15, AK, or MAC 11. So that is May 18th in the city of Detroit. Just throwing that out there. Australian activists defeat spy cameras in landmark case. Let's take a look now. You can see, I like that graphic right there. One nation under CCTV. That's exactly what they wanted, but not what they got. Let's take a look. A local resident opposed the introduction of CCTV cameras, successfully proved that public surveillance carried out by his city council not only broke Australia's privacy laws, but it also did nothing to prevent crime, the supposed reason for the installation. It was ruled that the council is to refrain from any conduct or action in contravention of an information protection principle or privacy code practice of. So you can go and read that full article for yourself, but great work to the people of Australia, at least this individual who dared stand up to his city council. And we'll be talking more about city councils here in just a little bit. We had a run-in with our city council member, Mark Martinez, about a month ago, and we'll be referencing that in just a little bit. But let's go now to Boston. Boston's top cop warns against a police state. Now, this is the cop that you guys know, Dan Bedondi, had a chance to confront, and some other people as well. But these are the words he had to say. We do not and cannot live in protective enclosures because of the actions of extremists who seek to disrupt our way of life, Davis told lawmakers, adding, I do not endorse the actions to move Boston and our nation into a police state mentality with surveillance cameras attached to every light pole in the city. Now, I do respect Mr. Davis for coming out with this claim. I believe he's also talking about drones at one point, but he said he does want more cameras and undercover police officers at events. So, okay, you want a few more officers at events, but at least the guy doesn't want, you know, just like you said, cameras on every street pole, which they want in many places, and they have in cities such as London. Now, let's move on now. This is probably one of my favorite headlines of the night. Bizarre moment. CNN anchors unsuccessfully try to pretend they are not in same parking lot. Well, it's not very bizarre because they do stuff like this all the time. And we'll watch this video right here. You can see, look at the vehicles driving behind. I believe that's Nancy Grace. And look, okay, you saw the red car. Can we scroll that back, guys? All right, you saw the red car. All right, there it goes behind anchor number one. And here it comes, anchor number two. And let it keep rolling. You're going to see the same bus drive by. Okay, here comes the bus. There's bus, and there's the bus. So you can see right there they are in the same parking lot trying to pretend that they're on different sides of the city or wherever else, trying to pretend like they have a remote. And actually, Alex Jones made a report about this earlier this year, and we're going to re-air it for you right now.
These are aerial pictures here in Harris County, Texas, as we have been watching the better part of this last hour. North Harris campus is on lockdown. This is an active situation. We are not showing you live pictures because of what we may possibly see.
The corporate state-run media calls anybody that questions the official propaganda that's pumped out by the government and the dinosaur media as conspiracy theorist. And that's just a way to demonize your opposition and to try to get weak-minded people to not investigate the information that the alternative media is putting out. Now, that said, it doesn't mean that everything the government or mainstream media puts out is a lie. I've gotten a lot of criticism for not coming out and saying that Sandy Hook is an inside job. It has some of the telltale signs of being an inside job, but those are the same signs you will see if the government is simply using the crisis. Like Rahm Emanuel has famously said, don't let a good crisis go to waste. Here's a clip of that.
You never want a serious crisis to go to waste. And what I mean by that, it's an opportunity to do things that you think you could not do before.
Now, again, in the last month and a half, I have not come out and said that this was clearly a staged event. Unfortunately, evidence is beginning to come out that points more and more in that direction, and we're going to show you that information in a moment. Now, a lot of the tens of millions of video views on YouTube concerning the Sandy Hook hoax surround CNN and what appears to be people who've been coached, people who've been given cue cards, people who are behaving like actors. And we see CNN criticizing all the witnesses from the helicopter and the news crews and witnesses, adults, that saw multiple people being detained who were in camo. We're told, oh, those are five-year-olds saying that. It's a conspiracy theory. When it's not five-year-olds saying that, it's adults. It's police admitting that, quote, police officers were arrested from other jurisdictions creeping around the woods. Something serious is going on here. And CNN, over and over again, is at the heart of the fishy things that are happening. Now, remember, in 1990, 1991, when the Gulf War started, CNN would send out their raw feeds to their news affiliates, and on it there was clear blue screens on top the roof of CNN Center in Atlanta with their top reporters claiming they were in Israel under sarin nerve gas attack from Scuds. And later they had to admit quietly, this is on record, we're going to show you some clips, that indeed they were in Atlanta, Georgia, and that they were not being attacked by Scud missiles with sarin gas. CBS News got caught scripting videos as well. And there's a lot of examples of this. So let's go ahead and look at those clips.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
I'm starting to get real bothered by all this.
You ready?
Boy, did I almost look stupid.
Charles Jaco, CNN, reporting live from Saudi Arabia.
And that there are also firings in another city in Saudi Arabia. CNN's Carl Rochelle is here with me. He just came up. Carl, I know we can't be very specific given these restrictions, but within those parameters, what did you see?
Well, what I saw, I didn't see anything hit. I looked almost straight above us. There is a vapor trail coming from my right to my left, and there's a cloud of something. It looks like it might have been an explosion, a cloud.
He's putting on a gas mask. There hasn't been any gas dropped here that we could tell.
You smell anything?
No. Oh. You may smell some of the fumes from a missile exhaust going off. The missiles use a rocket, a cordite, some sort of burning. We just heard a little funk just then. But,
I have to apologize for that. I caught a whiff of something and felt momentarily dizzy. You're more experienced.
Now, remember, that's only a small portion of hours of raw CNN feed that back in the old days, they didn't scramble the big satellite feeds because they thought most people wouldn't have a 12-foot dish to get it. But people did record that, and that's how they got caught with their pants down. And notice that blue screen in the background so they could project the Tel Aviv and Jerusalem skylines in the background. Coming up, we've got Anderson Cooper. Supposedly it's Sandy Hook, and it's clearly blue screen. I've worked with blue screen for 17 years. We've got it right in there. We know what it looks like. We know what the anomalies look like. And we know what happens when you don't tune it properly. It's clearly blue screen. And you can draw from that what you want. That's coming up in a moment. So CNN's done it before. I have mainstream news articles here out of the Washington Post, out of WorldNet Daily, where CNN had to admit that they had army psychological warfare inside of their system, basically crafting the news. And then, of course, we have things like Operation Northwoods, where in 1961, the Joint Chiefs came to Kennedy with Lemnitzer's plan and said, we want to stage shootings around America in crowded public places like movie theaters and things, and on the street to blame the Soviets as a pretext for war with Cuba. And Kennedy said, no, they've had the plan for mass shootings before, so we can't be attacked and others can't be attacked for questioning known liars who put on fake news and questioning a government that's been caught wanting to stage shootings. And they didn't just plan to stage shootings. In the 60s, 70s, and 80s, this was declassified by the Italian government and their president and the head of their CIA a few years ago, that the U.S. government used terrorists to stage terror attacks, and NATO did this as well to blame their political opposition, be they left or right, similar to what we saw with Oklahoma City. And part of that program was called the NATO Option or Operation Gladio. So look that up for yourself. I've also interviewed police officers that were involved in the rescue at Oklahoma City, like Mr. Browning, who's in the award-winning film A Noble Lie, who were threatened by the FBI if they talked about what they knew with death.
But was told more than once or twice by agents in the area that people like my wife and I would have ended up dead, but not going along with what we knew to be true.
Wow, so you're a decorated Vietnam veteran, police officer, one of the heroes that responded when there could have been other bombs and was thought there were other bombs, and the FBI agents in the police office are telling you, do what you're told or you and your wife are dead. And you're saying this on record here, sir.
Yes, sir.
What did they know about? Federal agents inside planting the bombs in Oklahoma City. And it was Attorney General Holder, who later ran the false flag of Fast and Furious, who was Deputy Attorney General back in 1995, who ran the cover-up. And those emails have come out in different lawsuits that are available online if you'd like to look those up. Go out and check everything I'm telling you. You're going to find out it's even worse than I'm saying. In fact, that's what I get criticized for, is, you know, not covering at all this piece of evidence, that piece of evidence. There's too many. I clearly believe from the evidence children are really killed in Sandy Hook, and it's a real tragedy. But the fact that they're having people script things and that answers are being scripted is incontrovertible. We're going to get to some of that evidence right now.
It's believed at this hour, and it's been confirmed to ABC News by state police there in Connecticut, that two shooters were initially believed involved in the mass shooting. One of those shooters now dead. What's not been confirmed is whether or not that gunman took his own life or whether or not there was something that ensued after authorities began arriving at the scene.
Now, I'm just going to hit a few of the big unanswered questions of Sandy Hook. Just a few. The mainstream media keeps saying conspiracy theorists say there were multiple shooters. Nobody said that but a few poor five-year-olds who were traumatized. So we go and look, and there's countless adult witnesses. There's helicopter footage. There's police reports. There's video. There's local news accounts saying, oh, it was a tactical officer from a nearby jurisdiction who happened to be hanging out in the woods and wearing the same thing as what people said the shooters were wearing. No big deal, though. Let's just go ahead and ignore that. And that's in the Newtown Bee and other publications. And then, again, we have the newscast saying other shooters and showing people being grabbed in the woods. But we're told we never saw that. Here's a clip.
They did walk a guy out of the woods. I saw him walk a guy out earlier with handcuffs. And he walked by us and said he didn't do it.
It was a grown man.
A grown man, yeah. He's sitting in the front of the police car over there now. So, I mean...
He didn't have a gun?
No, I didn't see any gun. Just had him handcuffed. And he walked by us and looked into parents' eyes and said, I didn't do it.
How was he dressed?
Camo pants with a dark jacket.
I have reports that the teacher saw two shadows running past the building, past the gym, which would be rear...
They're shooting. Yeah, we got them. They're coming at me down Crest Point. Come up the driveway left side.
F6, this is it.
One of the big issues out there that has people asking questions is Robbie Parker, who reportedly lost one of his daughters. And people see the photos out there where it looks like Obama's meeting with all three of his children and things like that. And when you watch the footage, I know grieving parents do strange things, but it looks like he's saying, okay, do I read off the card? He's laughing, and then he goes over and starts basically breaking down and crying. So let's show that clip.
Family is there, and they're getting ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen to it. Okay. My name's Robbie Parker. My family is one of the families that lost a child yesterday in the Sandy Hook Elementary School shootings here in Connecticut.
I haven't touched this, okay? All I know is they're seizing on it. They staged Fast and Furious. The head of Gun Owners of America has said on my own show, Larry Pratt, that if they'd staged Fast and Furious to kill thousands, our government, to blame the Second Amendment, they'd stage anything.
What is your take right now on this situation? What are you, I mean, obviously they're seizing on it politically. Obama's saying you shouldn't have Semiano. We're seeing Michael Moore, all the usual suspects. Sure. Bloomberg's telling police to go on strike. We're going to cover all those points. But what does your gut tell you?
Now we have to admit that maybe this is something that our government is capable of, because this is only 12 people murdered. They were good for 400 in Fast and Furious.
All I know is overall gun crime's going down, so I'm just defending the Second Amendment. But people are pointing this out. I didn't cover it until last week. They had the Lone Star College gang-related shooting where three people were shot, thank God not killed. And CNN kept saying, we're not going to show you live feeds because of what you might see. We're going to show that in a moment. And I was watching the local KHOU and getting to see what people were actually saying. And so that's a big deal in news when they start deciding not to show you helicopter footage because of what you might see.
Another school shooting. These are aerial pictures here in Harris County, Texas, as we have been watching the better part of this last hour. North Harris campus is on lockdown. This is an active situation. We are not showing you live pictures because of what we may possibly see. As a result, we are showing you delayed tape pictures as police, SWAT, FBI. Now,
this is the same CNN that staged Scud attacks that their people were supposedly under with a blue screen. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the finale. I saw this footage where Anderson Cooper turns. He's supposedly there at Sandy Hook in front of the memorial, and his whole forehead and nose blurs out. I've been working with blue screen, again, for 17 years. I know what it looks like. It's clearly blue screen. Clearly. And I thought, that's got to be somebody's doctored YouTube. There's no way. We went to CNN, found a link where the whole interview had been posted. It's been removed. Oh, by the way, just like some of the earlier clips, like Robbie Parker, have been removed. I forgot that. So I'm thinking, okay, they took it down. Let me go to archive.org, which is a respected group that puts the archives up, and I found it all unedited right there, exact same footage in high def. And we're going to show you a clip of that right now, full size, and then we'll enhance it and blow it up. All right, folks, again, when we see these anomalous clips, we actually do our best to go to the source. And the best we can tell, they did post the entire interview after they did it on CNN.com, but it's been removed. But we went to Internet Archive, highly respected, archive.org. This is not some, quote, conspiracy site. This is archive.org. They've got an unedited entire interview in 10-minute chunks. That's how they do it. So here it is at the very beginning of this chunk where his nose disappears, and we have blue screen here. It's clearly blue screen.
Is there anything else you want to say?
And Anderson Cooper has got some explaining to do, because I know blue screen when I see it. I believe children died at Sandy Hook, and there are a lot of parents going through serious grief, so that can account for some of the strange behavior. Nothing can account for what happens to his nose. And this is CNN, admittedly run by the Pentagon and PSYOPs, Washington Post, WorldNet Daily. This needs to be investigated. They're clearly using this to go after our guns. The government knows overall violent crime's down 49% in the last 20 years. They know more guns means less crime. So they're clearly being opportunistic. That's undoubted. Something, though, is really starting to get suspicious here. I mean, I'm sick of it always being a conspiracy. We know it's a conspiracy that they're putting people on Prozac and stuff that makes them go out and do this. We know that's the real cause of some of these real shootings. It's at the root. But the fact that this whole thing could be staged, it's just mind-blowing. Tell us what you think. Great job to all the people out there, the crowdsourcing that are researching all these clips. No wonder CNN won't put out a live feed anymore. I mean, they are panicked because they know you're watching and I'm watching. Just like Kurt Haskell, lawyer with his wife, with the underwear bomber a few Christmases ago. He saw the government getting him on the plane. He was the only guy to tell that story for a month and a half. And then on C-SPAN, the Undersecretary of State, Kennedy, admitted that they'd been ordered by an unnamed U.S. agency to help that patsy get on the plane.
There have been numerous cases where our unilateral and uncoordinated revocation of the visa would have disrupted important investigations that were underway by one of our national security partners. They had the individual under investigation, and our revocation action would have disclosed U.S. government's interest in that individual and ended our colleagues' ability, such as the FBI, to pursue the case quietly and to identify terrorist plans and co-conspirators.
The system's scared because they know I'm watching and you're watching. So you can't blame anybody for not believing known certified liars in the government and at CNN. It's that simple. Sorry, we don't trust you anymore. If you told us the sun came up in the morning, people would go out and check before they believed you. Alex Jones signing off for InfoWars.com.
Boy, did I almost look stupid.
Charles Jacob, CNN, reporting live from Saudi Arabia.
So nothing new from CNN. They've been doing this for a very long time. Would not be surprised at all if something like this happens again in the very near future. We'll move on now. Farmer faces jail time for feeding community. How dare you dare to feed your community? Wisconsin dairy farmer Vernon Heschberger is charged with four criminal misdemeanors that could land this husband and father in county jail for up to 30 months with fines of over $10,000. The Wisconsin Department of Agricultural Trade and Consumer Protection targeted Heschberger for supplying a private buying club with fresh milk and other farm products. We know that by the raise that you don't supply people with fresh milk and fresh cheeses and so on. He is charged, Heschberger is charged, among other things, with operating a retail food establishment without a license. Heschberger repeatedly rejects this, citing that he provides foods only to paid members in a private buying club and is not subject to state food regulations. So here's another guy who just wants clean milk and non-irradiated food, but if he dares to do something outside of the jurisdiction, or should I say outside of the financial backing of, like, say, a city permit or, you know, having some kind of a commercial establishment, they want to throw the guy in jail. So I definitely encourage people to contact, I believe this is Barbaroo, Wisconsin, contact the city council, contact Mr. Heschberg himself if he so desires. Contact the mayor, anybody you can, the prosecutor, lo and behold, and say, hey, leave this guy alone. Let him sell his milk and cheeses and so forth. Now, I want to move on now to a little bit of police brutality. The streets here in Austin are pretty much locked down as our Emperor Obama is riding around in his private planes and helicopters and so forth, and people are just laying out on the streets for him to walk over. I mean, maybe that hasn't happened yet, although the yet out there. But speaking of police just acting wild, let's take a look at this clip. Rochester, New York police officers assault disabled man with motorized wheelchairs. So let's go ahead and play that clip now.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Come on, come on, come on, I am. Come on, come on. Yo, real talk. And they maced him. He was at the bus stop. He kicking him. Oh, you can't even call the police on the police scrap.
Let's go. All right, and the context for that clip was the guy in the wheelchair, I guess, was maybe a little belligerent. He was maybe right around yelling and, you know, maybe being obscene. I'm not exactly sure. But anyway, the police responded. You know, we saw two officers throw the guy to the ground, kick him, mace him. Then you saw several other officers come to detain this man in a wheelchair, of all things. This guy needed four or five officers, several cop cars to restrain this non-struggling man. And that's just the type of police state we live in. And speaking of police states, David Knight has a special report talking about the police chief, or maybe it's the commissioner in Washington, D.C., threatening Adam Kokesh and his followers, anybody who chooses to join him on July 4th, with arrest if they choose to enter Washington, D.C. with a loaded firearm.
A Washington police chief, Kathy Lanier, had this to say when asked about Adam Kokesh's planned 4th of July march into Washington with loaded rifles.
First of all, I want to clear up, there's a difference between civil disobedience, which I think is this is being portrayed as a civil disobedience, and actually violation of the law. I mean, there's two different things here. So civil disobedience, people come to Washington, D.C. to protest policies and government policy all the time. It's no problem. But when you cross into the District of Columbia with firearms and you're not in compliance with the law, now you're talking about a criminal offense, and there's going to be some action by police.
So Chief Lanier wants to make some kind of a distinction between civil disobedience and violating the law. So here again is her definition of civil disobedience.
Civil disobedience, people come to Washington, D.C. to protest policies and government policy all the time. It's no problem.
Note that Chief Lanier characterizes peaceful assembly in order to petition the government as civil disobedience. But what law does a demonstration break? When someone exercises their right to protest, specifically recognized by the First Amendment, how is that disobedience in any way? Since the D.C. police chief hasn't read the Constitution that she swore to uphold when she took office, let's remind her what it says. The right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Chief Lanier, going to Washington and protesting government policy is not civil disobedience. It's an exercise of a constitutionally guaranteed right. Civil doesn't mean polite. It means government. And as we all know from experience, government is not always civil. Disobedience means to actively and publicly disobey laws that are unjust. It is violating the law. Martin Luther King had this to say about violating a court order against him marching.
That I do feel that there are two types of laws. One is a just law and one is an unjust law. I think we all have moral obligations to obey just laws. On the other hand, I think we have moral obligations to disobey unjust laws, because non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as is cooperation with good.
Civil disobedience always involves violating a law. That's where the disobedience part comes in. So Kathy Lanier's distinction between civil disobedience and violating the law is nonsense. What is the law that Adam Kokesh and his marchers would be disobeying or violating? The very law that was struck down by the Supreme Court in 2008 in D.C. versus Heller. Now, it's interesting to note that Dick Heller, the plaintiff in the case, was actually a D.C. cop who was suing for his right to carry a gun off duty. Of course, the real precedent for it being an individual right is the Second Amendment itself. Both the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that D.C.'s gun laws violate the Constitution. Washington, D.C.'s Firearms Control Regulation Act of 1975 specifically outlawed handguns and requires all firearms, including rifles and shotguns, to be kept, quote, unloaded and disassembled or bound by a trigger lock. That is why I imagine Adam Kokesh and the D.C. marchers are going to be marching with loaded rifles, to illustrate the fact that Police Chief Lanier and the District of Columbia have thumbed their noses at the Constitution and the Supreme Court decision of 5 years ago. So, Police Chief Lanier, there is no difference between civil disobedience and violating the law. But since you maintain there's a distinction, I would ask you, is your refusal to obey a Supreme Court ruling of 5 years ago that was made specifically about your gun laws, and your refusal to obey the Constitution that you swore to uphold, is that civil disobedience, or is that violating the law? For InfoWars, I'm David Knight.
And win, lose, or draw, I definitely admire Adam for going through with this. You know, you have to judge for yourself whether this is going to be right for you or not. I believe Alex is going to go. I don't know if he's going to be armed or not, but Adam will be armed and definitely interested in seeing what happens here. It's definitely going to be history-making, if nothing else. So let's go on to our last article of the night. Man arrested for allegedly shooting a realistic toy gun with kids in Queens Park. Let's just roll the footage there.
Jack Pawlowski was led out of his Queens home in handcuffs in front of his stunned-looking wife and three young kids. He said nothing as detectives put him in their car.
I don't tend to take things lying down. I confronted him. I don't care if that firearm is plastic. That's absolutely unacceptable.
He told us he took one of these toy guns and two of his kids around the corner to Ditmars Park.
The 54-year-old Pawlowski is charged with reckless endangerment, endangering the welfare of a minor, resisting arrest, and possession of an illegal BB gun.
Completely ridiculous. If we can go to that full screen so people can see the quotes that some of these people had to say, if we can scroll through a little bit. I want to read this one. Yes, right there. I mean, he's brandishing a firearm, and I don't care if that firearm is plastic. It's unacceptable. That from a self-appointed busybody and snitch, a woman out there, hey, I don't care if you're playing with toys or BB guns. It's so out there, and I'm offended. And also, you saw the city councilman in that clip who had something to say, said you cannot run around with a realistic-looking gun. And I can tell you from personal experience, anytime a city councilman and a self-appointed snitch like that get together, somebody gets screwed. Myself and David Knight witnessed that when we went to the Moms Demand Action Rally. So that brings us to the end of this segment. But stay tuned, because after the segment, we have two additional interviews, one with Ian DeSantis. He almost had his guns taken by the police. They tried to seize his guns after a mental health evaluation, even though there's nothing wrong with the guy. We'll talk to him, see what he has to say. And also Cody Wilson, who I alluded to earlier, is going to be joining us talking about the printable gun revolution. But for right now, let's go to our quote of the day. This from Frank Church. In examining the CIA's past and present use of the U.S. media, the committee finds two reasons for concern. The first is the potential inherent in covert media operations for manipulating or incidentally misleading the American public. And that from Frank Church. So if you want to support this broadcast, you want to see it continue, go to PrisonPlanet.tv and get yourself a 15-day free trial. There's a lot of great stuff there. The Alex Jones Show, the Nightly News, the Rants, all the good stuff is waiting right there for you. So stay tuned. Right after this segment, we'll be back with Ian DeSantis, and after that, with Cody Wilson.
Many anthropologists and archaeologists believe that before man even discovered the power to harness and use fire, we were involved in agrarian activities. That is, taking the seeds of plants and then replanting them to produce more. The very foundation of our modern civilization and human culture is centered around the planting and cultivation of edible plants, fruits, vegetables, nuts, you name it. And the globalists have been going after gardening. They've been harassing people that have gardens in their front yards or their backyards. They've called for licenses for people to have gardens because you can't trust prisoners in the police state America to be able to grow their own food. That's why I've come to the realization that we need to become self-sufficient. You need to be informed. You need to have the Second Amendment to protect yourself. You need to be politically active to wake up others. You need to filter your water. But you also need to plant a garden. Even if you live in an apartment, you can do this. If you live in the countryside, obviously you can do it on a grand scale. There are so many green belts in areas that humans don't even visit, nearby cities and in suburbs, where people are now more and more planting their own little private gardens and meadows and off the side of the road. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a revolutionary act to unplug from the television, to unplug from the computer and all the globalist propaganda, and to go out in your backyard or your front yard or planters at your apartment or on the roof of the building where you live and to plant a garden.
Here are some of the amazing deals at InfoWars Seed Center at InfoWarsShop.com. The Survival Seed Vault by My Patriot Supply features only the finest survival heirloom seeds for a robust and hardy garden, even in the toughest of times. The ARC All-in-One Seed Kit contains 70 varieties of 50,000 seeds of fruits, vegetables, medicinal, and culinary herbs. All ARC seeds are heirloom. Each type is labeled and sealed separately for ease of use and longevity. The Deluxe Emergency Seed Bank combines three of Emergency Seed Bank's top sellers: the Family Survival Emergency Seed Bank, the Medicinal Herb Seeds Pack, and the Culinary Herb Seeds Pack. We also have starter varieties of the deluxe seed packages for fruit, salad, salsa, peppers, and medicinal herbs and more. Go to the InfoWars Seed Center at InfoWarsShop.com.
A little seed can grow a huge tree that produces fruit for up to 50 years. We have the best life bombs. That's what these are. We have the best weapons against death out there at the lowest prices, waiting for you to lovingly plant them and lovingly grow them and lovingly eat them and share them with others. We will strike back against the New World Order, and this is only one more initiative in our fight against them. So please join us at InfoWarsShop.com, or you can link through at InfoWars.com at the InfoWars Seed Center.
And welcome back. Our guest tonight is Ian DeSantis. Now, Ian contacted us. Well, you know, we've been talking a lot about the people who have their guns confiscated and plans to confiscate people who have mental disorders, mental disabilities, and whatnot. Now, Ian is somebody who has been a victim of this system, of the mental health system, saying that he was a danger to himself and others just because he was mildly depressed. Maybe not even depressed. He was a little bummed out, and let's use that term, after he lost his job and he called his mom, and all kinds of crazy things happened. So I'll let him explain his story. He joins us now via Skype. Thanks for joining us, Ian.
Thanks for having me, Jakar.
All right, now, Ian, let's take about 2 minutes. Let's go over the story about how this happened. So you lost your job, that's correct, and then you contact your mother, say, hey, I just lost my job, and I'm not feeling so hot. So take about 2 minutes. Tell us what happened in that conversation and what happened as a result of that conversation.
This was on Friday, May 18th of 2012, last year, and I just had lost my job. and was just not feeling too good. I wasn't like depressed or anything, but just kind of wanting some support from my family. And I was trying to rekindle a relationship with my mom after we had been estranged for a few years. And I thought that it might be good to just let her know how I was doing. So I gave her a call and let her know I had just lost my job and that I might be selling some things to keep my apartment. But, you know, luckily it didn't end up like that. But I was just letting her know what was going on. And the context of the conversation was just, like, pretty mild and just letting her know, like, what I was going through. And after that conversation, she called a suicide hotline and told them I was, like, unable to take care of myself and I might be a danger to myself and other people, and that she was aware that I owned a 10/22 rifle. And she let them know all that, and that's what basically triggered this all to go down the way it did.
Okay, Ian, so you contact your mother, and she calls a suicide hotline. Now, yeah. Based on that, the context, we'll get to that just in a second, the actual context of the conversation, but I'm aware that some sheriffs showed up to your house. Is that correct?
They blocked off the block where I live on. Like, I guess it's protocol in, like, a suicide case with a firearm. They've been called. They have to block off the neighborhood and let all the businesses nearby and go to a few residences and let them know what they're doing. And then they gave me a phone call when I was over at my neighbor's house, just trying to relax that day. Just I had been looking for work all morning and just wanted to spend the rest of the day kind of relaxing. I mean, I had just been laid off, and I just wanted to clear my head a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then I get a phone call from one of the sheriffs. A sergeant asked me to step outside with my hands in the air. And I was really not sure what all this was about, you know, initially. And I kept asking, what's going on? What's this about? And they're like, you're not in trouble. You know, don't worry. You didn't do anything wrong, you know? And then I like step outside, and like there's sheriffs all over the street, and they all got their guns pointed at me.
But how many sheriffs would you say they were?
There was at least 15 to 20.
Okay.
It was overkill, but I guess that's just what they do these days, just because they always err on the side of caution.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you step outside, and what happens when you step outside?
I just am like trying to figure out what's going on, you know, because I've never had all these guys pointing guns at me like I'm some bank robber or something. And like I walk over to my pickup truck and open the bed. I mean, I pull down the tailgate and sit down, you know, because I don't really know what's going on. I just don't want, like, feel comfortable with all these cops pointing guns at me. And I got this one cop or sheriff coming up to me, and he's like, hey, I need to search you right away. I'm still not even sure what's going on. And I'm like, no, I don't feel comfortable with you searching me. Like, you have no probable cause. There's no reason for you.
So they didn't tell you why they wanted you to step outside or why they wanted to search you?
No.
They just said, come outside and we want to search you.
It's like a theme that the authorities have these days where they just want to keep everybody in the dark as much as possible to, like, keep you really calm, you know, and, like, and just kind of lead you on like a cattle to, like, slaughter. That's honestly, in retrospect, that's, like, really how I felt. Just, like, I was just trying to be really calm and like, collective and together. And then they're just trying to, like, not inform you about what's going on as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's really hard to keep your anxiety low when it's like that. When you're, like, just kind of being led on, like, you didn't do anything wrong. Don't worry. And, like, you're just thinking to yourself, I hope they're right, you know?
Right. Like, okay, so what did it turn out they actually wanted to talk to you about?
They wanted to talk to me because my mom had expressed concerns that I was, like, a danger to myself and others, and that I also owned a gun. And they were really imminent about the fact that I owned a firearm. They really wanted to get that gun for me, like, out of caution. That was basically their excuse, was that, like, I might be telling the truth, but I might be lying, and I might go kill myself with my own gun. Like, it just sounds silly to have someone tell you, like, the same way you hear on the news people saying, like, you know, if you have a gun in your house, you're more likely to shoot a family member. And you're thinking to yourself, why would I do that? Like, yeah. I'm not one of those people that does that.
Now, know? Just out of curiosity, Ian, what kind of firearm do you own?
It's a 10/22, but I no longer own it because I had to get rid of it in order to be released from the mental hospital.
Okay, now you just said something big. Now let's go to how you actually got into the mental hospital.
They just kind of kept me outside of my house.
Now, this is the same day the sheriffs came and told you to come outside of the home.
Yeah, they're keeping me there on, like, in, like, a standoff. where they're saying I have to talk to a psychiatrist against my will. And, like, I'm trying to say if they want that to happen, they have to bring them to my house. And they're telling me it could take hours. And I actually live on top of a restaurant, and they're about to open for their evening that night. So I wanted to just kind of wrap this up and stop making a scene in the neighborhood.
Right.
And so now that was the wrong decision. I need to just make a scene as much as possible. Because there's a power in numbers. The moment they got you alone, they can just, you know, take advantage from there.
Exactly. Like, now, Ian, I want to get to the point where you're actually at the mental hospital. So yeah, you were taken by the sheriffs. Is that correct?
Yeah, they basically were like, let's get this sped up. Let's get this going. Like, come on and let's go to the hospital. And I'm like, you know, whatever we got to do to make this go quicker. I want to just prove my innocence and get on with my night and go eat some dinner.
Okay, so were you voluntarily went with the sheriffs to the hospital. Is that correct?
I voluntarily went to have an involuntary evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, like, I volunteered to be involuntarily evaluated.
Okay, and I want to point out to people, this is something that happens quite commonly. It may not be for a mental health situation, but let's say, you know, the police show up to your house. Hey, Mr. Jones, Mr. Smith, can you come down to the station for a few questions? And people voluntarily go, expecting to be released later. Is that what you were expecting, Ian?
Oh, totally. And then as soon as I get to the hospital, that's when I knew everything was wrong, because, like, the sheriff starts asking me to take my clothes off, and it's like you're just looking at them like, what the hell did you just ask me to do?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you heard right. Take off your clothes. You got to be in a hospital gown if you need to meet with the psychiatrist. And he's like, I know it sounds silly, you know, just do it, and it'll help everything go along a lot quicker.
Okay. Now, Ian, I want to get to a few documents here that you were able to send us, and I was very impressed because when Ian contacted us, he said, hey, I had the situation, and I said, do you have any documents? He said, yeah, I have plenty. And for just for the sake of time, I think you sent us about 20 or so. We'll go through maybe about 10 or just as many as we can in the time we have.
Right.
Right. Okay, now, just for our viewers, I will say some of this information has been redacted. Some of this was personal information about Ian himself or about the medical professionals he came in contact with. So I'll just go ahead and throw that out there. Now, I want to start with this one. This says Goleta Valley Cottage Primary. And it says patient states he was upset and talking to his mother and said, quote, sometimes I think it would just be less stress if I ended it all. States that she then, the mother, called the police and that they told him he had to come here for evaluation. Patient denies any suicidal, homicidal thoughts or plans at this time. States, quote, I was just feeling overwhelmed and said stuff I didn't mean. Now, Ian, I saw you shaking and nodding your head during our reading. So did you have any discrepancy?
It's because the story changed so many times during this process. You had, like, I had some nurses that were willing to write on paper that I'm not a suicidal or homicidal person and I don't show any evidence of it. And then later after that same document you just read, I've got people at the mental facility writing that I look like I have poor insight and poor judgment and, like, I look homeless. Mm-hmm. And, like,
disheveled is the word they actually used.
So, of course, you're going to be really out of it, you know, mentally when they've drugged you with an injection against your will. And I honestly
So when you got to the hospital, they physically drugged you?
Yes. They after I was stripped naked and put into a hospital gown, I met with a psychiatrist, and they asked me some really general questions just about, like, so was this a rhetorical statement? Like, you didn't really mean it? And I'm like, yeah, exactly. This is all a mistake. And I just explained it to them just like that, and I felt like the psychiatrist understood.
Mm-hmm.
But I know now they're just kind of observing me, and they're not listening to anything I had to say, because I have the paper that the psychiatrist wrote as well, and she wrote on there that I admitted to wanting to hurt myself and other people with my firearm, which is absolutely not true one bit.
Okay, so I want to make sure we clarify that statement. At any point, did you threaten to hurt yourself or others with either firearms or your bare hands or anything?
But you have statements from some nurses and some authorities saying I did and some saying I didn't. So there's conflicting information amongst themselves,
mm-hmm,
trying to figure out what I said or didn't say.
Okay, now I want to go.
After I met with a psychiatrist, they took me down to another emergency room, and they brought in a doctor. The psychiatrist was gone at that point. I mean, they had done their job, which was to put me on a 5150 hold for 72 hours. And they brought a doctor in, and the doctor said, well, we've got to make sure you're calm. And and I'm like, I am calm. What's going on? I still honestly thought I was going to get released after this, because I had just myself with a psychiatrist. And then they're getting injections ready and vials, and they're saying, we have to take blood from you. for testing, and we have to get a urinalysis, and we need to give you this shot to calm you down.
So did you consent to the blood draw or the injections?
The only thing I consented to was to pee in a little cup, because that's the only thing I felt like I would do for them without violating my personal privacy, you know?
Right. Now, Ian, I want to move fast because we don't have too much time left. I want to move on to another document. This says application for 72-hour detention, and I'll skip down if we can get a document cam to about, yeah, right about there is good. He made suicidal statements, and the patient was carrying a rifle and states he was going to shoot anyone who would try to take it. Now, I have a question just for the person who wrote this document.
Yeah.
Was this at the time that you were detained, or I'd say arrested, kidnapped against your will? Or was this at the medical facility? At any point, were you carrying a rifle?
I was not carrying a rifle at any point, and that's just a perfect example of the telephone game that the authorities were playing with the information and the hearsay that was involving me. I mean, it was just like making things up, basically.
Okay, now, Ian, we'll move on to some of your other documents. Now, this one says, mental health facilities report a firearm prohibition.
Document was signed and filled out by the same person that made up the last document, statement on the last document. And they were a nurse at the mental hospital, and they got my Social Security card out of my wallet without my permission in order to complete that form, which is like a firearms prohibition form that they're going to send to the California State Department of Justice in order to make sure that I'm not eligible to own, possess, or all of the above involving a firearm for at least 5 years from the date that I was released.
Okay, now on this particular document, they have checked in the box that you are a danger to yourself or to others. Now,
right.
At any point, did you ever feel, were you feeling aggressive? Were you physically aggressive to anybody at any point?
The only time I ever felt physically aggressive was in my mind, and I kept all of that to myself because you're honestly not allowed to show any type of emotion in the mental facility. Otherwise, like per their DSM manual, they'll try to diagnose you with some type of a mental disorder just for feeling emotional.
Right. And we've actually reported on that. Mike Adams has done.
Yeah,
we're talking about that DSM.
It's really scary, and it takes a lot of like mental just strain.
Toil on you. Right. You know? Now, Ian, we have to move quick. But tell us, okay, so you're in the mental facility. Take about 2 minutes. Tell us your entire trip through the mental facility. I believe you were actually transferred at one point. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was transferred after I got injected while I was on the drugs to the mental facility via ambulance. And I stayed there for 72 hours, and I was just ignored. And, like, they don't really want to treat people like people in the mental hospital. They have this attitude like you must be here for a reason, and that no one could have possibly made a mistake. Otherwise, you'd have a lawyer come and get you out of here right away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, not everybody has a family lawyer. Not everybody has a family and or even a lot of money in the bank to help them in these situations. And so I had to ride it out. And immediately arriving at the mental hospital, I requested to speak with, like, the manager, the supervisor, whoever was in charge of the unit I was staying in. And
right.
It took them about 3 days to come meet with me. But I need to say this on camera, and that this manager explained to me that the mental hospital and the entire psychiatric system is indeed a business run for profit, and that there are people like myself who slip through the cracks in order to keep the money flowing.
Now, I'll just interrupt you for 1 second. We just had on the screen your actual hospital bill, I believe it is, and if we can put that back on the screen, we have the document cam shot. You were charged nearly $3,000 on this one particular bill, and I don't know if this is a separate bill or maybe an earlier bill. This says over about $2,500 on the second bill. And we can see his name is also right there at the top.
One of them is for the ambulance ride, and the other is for the hospital stay.
Okay. All right, so how long were you in the mental facilities altogether?
I was there for a total of 4 days, because at the end of my 72-hour period, they felt like because I didn't give my firearm to law enforcement and because I was still technically in possession of the firearm, they were going to push for a 52-50 hold, which is much different than a 51-50 hold in the sense that you'd be held for an additional 14 days in the mental hospital against your will, and you will never be allowed to own a firearm ever again. They put you on a federal database. But luckily, the judge had me released at the end of my 51-50.
Right.
After 72 hours.
Now, I'm going to go to this final document that I have here, if we can get document cam of this. Now, at the end of this document, it says you were originally charged or admitted as a danger to yourself. But if we can slide back down here, it says there is not probable cause to believe that the person as a result of a mental disorder is a danger to self or a danger to others. That there is not probable cause to
That's
believe
right.
this person is a danger to himself or to others. So is that was obviously the evaluation that you wanted, even though that's not, you know, what you wanted to have. You don't want to be whisked away to a mental facility, but they ultimately found that you were not a danger to yourself or to others. So what has happened since then, since your release? Are they trying to take your firearms? Have you bought any more firearms? What's going on?
Not on the record. I'm not buying any firearms, and I don't have any firearms. And I had to basically admit to them, whether they had proof or not, that I got rid of the 1022 in order for them to release me from the mental hospital. They had to have this type of peace of mind that they felt like I wasn't going to go home and shoot myself after my terrible experience in the mental hospital. And since this incident, I've just been trying to find a way to reverse this process and bring some kind of justice to light, because I just want to prove that this is all a mistake. From the start, that's all I've been trying to do, is prove that this is all a big misunderstanding. And unfortunately, what I'm finding through my troubles is that there's almost no way to hold these people that have done this accountable, just because of all the legal safety nets in place for these people. You know, it's terrible.
Exactly. Now, I'll interrupt you for 1 second, and then I'll let you go ahead with your final thoughts. Ian, we have an article right here. California's gun repo men have a nerve-wracking job. This is just from March of this year. It says... Now, this is referring to a gun confiscation team. They are preparing to confiscate weapons from a gun owner who had recently lost his rights to possess firearms after spending 2 days in a psychiatric hospital. So that's what it says. They didn't say, was the guy, was he guilty? Was he innocent? Was he sane? Was he insane? Whatever the medical term may be. It says, hey, he was in a hospital, and that was, I guess, for the purposes of this article, reason enough to detain him in a hospital and take his weapons. So, Ian, give us your final thoughts, and also how can people keep up with you and your story?
You can keep up with me and my story and check in on my my Google Plus channel, which is linked to my email. My email account is ian.desantis, D-E-S-A-N-T-I-S, at gmail.com. Go ahead and send me an email. I'm just like a regular guy, work a 9-to-5 job Monday through Friday, and I'm just trying to, like, get the word out to people. And, like, you know, people need to know they got to exercise their rights, or else they're not going to know they have those things there. You know, like, that's why you got to exercise them. It's like.
And you also had a YouTube page. Is that correct?
I've got a YouTube page. The account name is Joker, J-O-K-E-R, 13621.
Okay.
And that's my YouTube channel.
All right. Ian DeSantis. Now, we've been warning people that this has been going on in states like California, states like New York. And this is just another person who has been a victim of the system. Like we just told you a second ago, he was cleared mentally stable, I guess you would say. He had no probable cause.
Survivor of the system.
Because,
you know, they want us to all be victims. That's the key here, is they want us to all feel disempowered. But the truth is, we have the power.
All right, Ian DeSantis, thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you, Jakari.
I want to thank Ian for sharing his story with us. Now, you guys may have noticed this happened to him, I guess, about a year ago. He was pretty traumatized by the whole incident. I'm pretty sure as anybody would, so it took him a little bit to speak out, but I'm glad he did. I definitely hope that more people will take Ian's approach and get the word out there about this imagined tyranny. I believe it was Harry Reid who said that. But anyway, if you like this broadcast, you want to see it continue, go to the InfoWars shop, the InfoWars store, and pick up this right here. You can see one of our new editions, the Paul Revere t-shirt. You guys know we had Operation Paul Revere. That's still an active thing. We're in the judging portion right now, so stay tuned for that. But you can also pick up the Paul Revere t-shirt at the InfoWars shop, and I believe that's for $19.95. And also, if you really, really want to support us, go to the PrisonPlanet.tv website, and you can see it right there. The guy got arrested for drinking iced tea, many more things, the Alex Jones radio show, the rants, all that, so much more. You can get yourself a 15-day free trial. And that's what truly supports our broadcast and gets the information out there. And you can give that to your friends and family also. You get, I believe, 10 memberships or 10 users for the price of one. So definitely take a look at that. Well, that's it for this edition of the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm Jakari Jackson, and we'll see you tomorrow. All right.
The important thing about the Pro One filter today is that the material we use for removing fluoride and other heavy metals now will remove the latest form of fluoride called hydrofluorosilicic acid. There's no other fluoride reduction filter out there that will remove that type of fluoride. And it's extremely important because today we're hearing more and more cities are using that form of fluoride.
We've been having medication forced on us through the water system for quite a while. Most people don't realize it. Most people don't realize the negative effects of fluoride.
There's a wide range of health effects that are attributed to fluoride.
Bottom line, why should somebody get this new Pro One ProPure filter?
The reason to buy the Pro One, it's an all-in-one filter. It's convenient, easy to use. It doesn't require the add-on fluoride filter. And in addition, this filter removes the latest form of fluoride called hydrofluorosilicic acid.
I'm Darren McBreen, and these are some of the new items that are available now at InfoWarsShop.com.
Alert the public to Obama's blatant abuse of power with the new Obama t-shirt. Obama's Joker face on the front and come and take it on the back. It's time to publicly call him out for what he is, a tyrant. Defend the Second Amendment with our top seller come and take it t-shirts. And look at that, women's cut tank tops and t-shirts now available. Nice hat. Plus, the Don't Tread on Me flag. And now you can become a micro distributor of the InfoWars magazine. Plus, get your own copy delivered right to your door each and every month. And if you're tired like I am of you and your family being exposed to polluted drinking water, get the Pro One High Performance Water Filter. It gets rid of all pathogenic bacteria, cysts, fluoride, heavy metals, and numerous other contaminants.
So join the revolution at InfoWarsShop.com.
And I'd like to thank you for joining us in our final segment of the night. Our guest tonight is Cody Wilson of Defense Distributed. He's going to talk to us about a letter he got earlier today telling him to pretty much remove stuff from his site. All right, Cody, first of all, I want to shake your hand, sir, and congratulate you. I was very excited, I'm sure as many people were, when I saw the first printable gun actually fire. I saw you yourself. You seemed to be pretty overcome with some feelings there.
Yeah, it was the result of many months of work, and all in one moment, you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah, you had to take a moment and save it. I thought that was a great piece. I really enjoyed that. Now, let's get down to the brass tacks. You were on the Alex Jones show earlier today. And you broke the story here, correct? You did break it here?
Yeah, I told Alex. Like, I had just received the email like 10 minutes ago, and I was just teasing out what to do with it, and Alex calls, you know.
All right, tell us what happened when you received this email. What was the email?
The email is from the Secretary of State, Department of Defense Trade Controls. They administer the Arms Export Control Act and what's called the ITAR. There are certain pieces of information and goods that are on the United States munitions list. These things are regulated munitions, and that organization has the ability to control the export or the trade of those goods, especially across state or international lines.
Right.
And among the things they can regulate is technical data and information, images, anything really related to the arms, not just the arms themselves, any of the data. They can assert information control. So back in December when we started this project, we knew ITAR would be an issue. As an arms manufacturer, we registered ITAR, but we thought since Defense Distributed would be a nonprofit software company, we could not have to register for ITAR because we were just a software company, and then and not interested in actual trade of arms. And then number two, we could basically claim a public domain exemption from the ITAR, and we wouldn't have to ask permission to put the files up for download. Most people probably don't know that gun-related files might be regulated, and you have to actually ask permission to put them online. But
really? Okay.
We wanted to take the exception. But I wanted to do it without first asking permission because my reading of the law felt sound, and full speed ahead was my opinion back in December.
And you're a law student, so you're familiar with the laws.
Well, right. So thankfully I had access to Westlaw and Lexis, and I read the laws for myself. And then this is a subject that has come up many times over the months. Well, what are you going to do about ITAR? What is Defense Distributed going to do about ITAR? And I think we have a good solution. In fact, we claimed a couple different ways to find exemptions under under the public domain exception of ITAR. But again, it seems that DTETC wants to have a sit down and talk about it. And they cite certain parts of the ITAR, which is a signal that they may bring criminal prosecutions or civil penalties or something. So it's not a good day for the project, but it was expected. And we released especially the Liberator in such a good way that it's definitely online forever. And especially with news of this censorship, I don't think it will ever disappear. So that's a success, even if Defense Distributed or DEFCAT is somehow indefinitely shut down.
Exactly. Now, you talk about the you had to be regulated even if you have an online software. So how long was this a issue for you? Were you thinking about this back when you had the lower receivers, when you had the magazines? At what point did this come to the forefront of your mind?
Phil, the case of Phil Zimmerman was brought up to me before we even had our first 3D printer. They go, hey, you know, they'll probably come after you like they came after Phil Zimmerman. And he was the inventor of pretty good privacy, the PGP PGP scheme, basically, that allows people to communicate through strong cryptography. At the time, the United States considered that piece of software also to be ammunition governed by the Arms Export Control Act, and they started a criminal investigation of Mr. Zimmerman once he put it online. But eventually they abandoned the investigation because he had popularized, or the public itself had adopted PGP so well, it was just kind of already out of the bag, you know? And to me, I mean, I understand that this software seems more closely related to guns, and so there might be a different case, but the parallels seem pretty strong. At the end of the day, these are just bits. They're not actual bombs.
Okay. So with that in mind, do you expect, or is there anything that you're bracing for as far as criminal charges?
No, I mean, I don't think there's reason to expect criminal charges yet. We've got lawyers. I think I've got people who, this is in good hands with other people who can now carry on the communications with DTTC. It's my intention to comply. It's my belief that we've complied the whole time. I don't think we carried out our actions in a spirit of noncompliance.
Right.
So I expect a good result, but I'm prepared that if this is a political kind of reprisal, that, yeah, bad things might be coming. But again, if I could do it over, I'd do it the same.
Let's do it the same way. Because you told Alex earlier today, he said, are you being ordered? Are you being requested? And you said at this point you are being requested to remove the materials.
I've not had many communications with federal agencies, but I assume most things are requests. I don't know. But they seem to be pretty heavy requests once you've got...
Pretty adamant. We strongly suggest
we
you
like,
do exactly
really
what we...
You really ought to do this.
We do exactly what we tell you.
So, okay. You know, who am I? But perhaps this can be resolved, and perhaps this is exactly what this project needed to do to create, let's have this conversation now. Is the future going to be one of managed information and control from bureaucracies saying who can shift information online and who can publish what? Or is it going to be one informed by distributed technologies like 3D printing and the internet, where most people can just pass information to each other uninhibited?
And that's what we see with CISPA and the other things. They don't want the information to be trafficked to anybody other than the people they control.
I see nothing but two competing visions of the future. Our vision of the future won over the weekend, in just a sense that, like, one day you might be able to print a gun. It's a very impractical way of doing it, but one day you might be able to, because look, it works. It's a story about what techno-libertarianism means from here on.
Right.
They need to respond to that, and I think this is a political response. They need to assert some demonstration, something, some signal that they still are in control. And I really mean it in that way, because there's plenty of sites online that share gun files that, that operate today. And 3D printing isn't the first way that you're ever going to make a gun. That Liberator pistol is not the thing that you want to be shooting. But they needed to answer some way.
Oh, yeah. And you have the establishment just shaking to their core. Every week I turn on, you know, one of the big networks, and it's somebody, oh, this Cody Wilson guy down in Texas, he's making guns that you can print on your computer, and these guys are just shaking in their boots.
And they should be, but because there's so much misunderstanding, it's like the regulatory imagination had convinced everyone involved in Washington, the East Coast, and the West Coast that, yeah, we had this all under control, and now people have been making guns at home since you could make guns. And,
yeah, the zip guns, I mean, long before printers.
It's interruptive of the idea that it's inevitable they could control it. It's like it's an ideological victory. It is that. And I think it's a sign that, like, the liberalization of information actually does have material consequences now. Not tomorrow, but now. And so they just have to do whatever they think they can do. I wonder how much success they'll have. And of course, it's my intention to fight this as far as it can be fought. I wonder, though, if they'll press it.
I think they will. You know, I mean, it's only speculation at this point. But I want to shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about the advances you've made since you first started. When did you first start? What was your first project? And how have you seen your works advance until today?
I mean, in many ways, we haven't really advanced. We in the end...
I'd say you advanced. I mean, you started out with magazines, and now you have a operable gun. You know, it's probably not the thing you want to take into combat, but it works.
So the story of the project seems like a story of advancement, but the project begins with saying, well, we'd like to use an FDM printer to print a handgun. We think it might be possible. And while we have to wait these many months to get a license, we don't want to be forgotten about. And then there becomes the gun control debate across the nation. And we thought, well, there's all kinds of things we can legally make now without a license. So we began making lower receivers and magazines. And I thought each one of those articles, especially when they had their moment of attention in the press, it was worth demonstrating that these could be made more expediently on 3D printers than people expected. You could use this technology to do this. And this, in fact, had ideological significance. It was a competing story of the future, and I thought it was a way of taking the maker story and saying, yes, it also means guns. We were achieving so much then, but again, it was mostly because we were waiting on a license to actually begin prototyping guns like the Liberator.
Okay, so we see the what I call advancing, maybe just say it's, you know, it's a different chapter of the story, but you say they could be made more expediently using a printer. So how long did it take you to make that gun, the Liberator?
The Liberator takes at least 20 hours of printing. If you get all the pieces right, sometimes you'll mess up, you know.
How many rough drafts do you guys go through to come up with something, not just for Liberator? Let's start with something simple like a magazine.
Well, so we don't know anything, so it's trial and error, especially in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. My first magazine, we were out on the range. The dimensions were all wrong, and the mag catch slot was wrong. We were out on the range cutting it with keys because I forgot to bring a knife and a file. I mean, it was just very bare bone, you know, just very, very amateur. But we had that working in a couple days, and then you just keep going. You try new ideas. Sometimes you make a little step forward. Sometimes you're step back. And so it's a countless iterations on all the pieces. The Liberator has only been made successfully just a few times because we started testing barrels first. Mm. Oh, barrels work. That's an advancement. Then we started testing springs. And then we found the ones that we liked the best. And then we tried to put them into an assembly, which represents this rather... Maybe it's an ugly gun. I don't know, but it's the first.
I think that is a beautiful piece, and I'm not kissing this guy's butt. I'm really excited about this technology, especially with, you know, all the gun grabbing that's going on right now. But let's talk about that for a second. We see Feinstein, we see Joe Biden, we see all these other people. You know, they want to have a very tight control. We're not taking away your guns. We're just taking away certain parts of guns, or certain types of guns.
Right.
So when we see things like this, I mean, there are a lot of people that are scared, not just, you know, politicians, soccer moms, anybody who doesn't really understand firearms. So what would you say to somebody who's against this technology just at a base level?
Well, that's great in my mind that they're against an entire technology. And I think neoliberalism especially, like they should feel some dissonance, because to be against an entire technology is to, like, be against history in this sense, because we all share at least this cultural sense that technology only advances.
Right.
And so to be against this is to kind of become a reactionary. And I want to demonstrate, especially to some of the people who are on the fence, that their politicians are reactionaries. They're not interested in controlling guns. They're interested in controlling the future itself and basically all the levers of social administration.
I want to talk a little bit about your political philosophy, or should I say. And you said that you are a self-proclaimed anarchist. Is that correct?
Yeah. I claim affinity with traditional anarchism. I like crypto anarchy. That's a really cool way of...
Yeah, and I'm not trying to beat you down. People are like, they have this anarchist on it, you know. So just can you briefly explain, like, what... Does this tie into what your anarchy goals are?
The big reason that I thought this project was worth pushing is because it was such a sensational way of unpacking some of this ideology and maybe even mainstreaming it in a way that it hadn't been done in a long time. And... anarchism is basically the idea that there should be no rulers or political betters in society, that politically we don't have to have hierarchical structures and top-down command systems that then tell us, oh, look, you're in charge of yourself because you elected a ruler to tell you what to do. Isn't that great? Look at how in charge of yourself you are. No, it's a philosophy about self-liberation and self-management. And in this philosophy, you can engage and mutually associate with anyone you want, live in whatever community. Mm-hmm. You like to direct democracy? Go work in a workers' commune that organizes itself by direct democracy. That's great. You want to do some seasteading? Go out, do some seasteading and organize according to some kind of constitution you like. But it's a very federal view of how humankind can operate and a very mutualistic view. There's no command system that with force tells you what you're going to do, the taxes you're going to pay, or else.
Mm-hmm. And we see, you know, Obama and other people, not just Obama, but we see people who take means such as firearms to protect themselves, people in military and so forth, and definitely the military needs arms. But they want to say that they don't want you to have the means to go out and buy, let alone make your own firearm.
Yeah, you can see that, right? They have to put up with the fact that the Second Amendment is so well protected. But if anything makes gun production expedient, oh boy, better stop that.
Let me ask you this, because I thought about you and your technologies when I heard Obama this past week. I believe it was this week. He went down to Mexico, and he blamed the U.S. for the arms flowing into Mexico. And I was like, isn't this guy the head of an administration that had Operation Fast and Furious that gave guns to Mexican drug cartels? There's all these talks about background checks. This guy, under his administration, gave firearms to Mexican drug cartels, people who we knew were criminals. So what did you think about that?
I don't think we should hold Obama accountable for things. I mean, he just reads what's put up in front of him. You know, he's just a suit at the
end. My deal with Obama, not to cut you off, but, you know, just to talk about the debate of it, I mean, he's yet to hold anybody really accountable. And I'm not like one of these people, I blame everything on Bush, I blame everything on Obama. I'm not blaming these people personally.
I'm just saying, like, I don't take him seriously. I don't think he's a serious force in American politics. He's just kind of a figurehead, and he's, like, given all this moral authority, but really he's not consequential. What I'm more worried about is, like, the hierarchical structures that exist under him and what they're given the power to do, and basically the power that they give to themselves to be able to do outside of even democratic control. I see nothing but, like, accelerating and, like, billowing bureaucratic structures, which basically create a society where everything is prohibited and you must find some path for permission. This conditions the human psyche, and I think is unnatural. And I'm trying to fight against it ideologically, and I think that gun is a powerful, like, symbol that allows me to do that.
Exactly. And the reason I say I thought about your technology when he was making the speech, because I thought about all the people, the good people in Mexico, who don't have means to protect themselves from the roving cartels. I mean, we've shown several pieces of footage. It's on the mainstream as well as one of the few things they will cover. These roving gangs in Mexico with their fully automatic firearms terrorizing the population.
Of course, there's so much hypocrisy, of course. Like, there's this senator on the East Coast, I think it's Jersey or something, he's talking about arming the Syrian
resistance,
al-Nusra, and the Free Syrian Army.
They've already been arming.
But at the same time, his home state is a gun control state. I mean, there's these severe inadequacies and what I would call, you know, like massive cognitive distances.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I mean, I'm more interested in the irony that, like, Obama could be in Austin today, right? I'm in Austin. We're both in Austin.
Right.
Obama could be here, right, simultaneously giving a speech about the future of manufacturing and talking about his 3D printing initiative. And then I could be getting shut down by his administration because, in fact, my project represents the future of manufacturing and 3D printing. There's this strange tension where basically the signal is that, sure, it's going to be the future, but it's going to be directed and managed, and we're going to be in control of it. And if it actually is subversive and threatens to develop and manage itself outside of control schemes, it must be stopped.
Exactly.
You can see that today.
So just briefly for the few members of our audience who aren't familiar with you and your works, can you just tell us some of the things that you've been able to produce with your 3D printer? Did you have anything before the magazines?
Yeah, the very first things we started printing were lower receivers of AR-15s. We made some progress there in December, but then Sandy Hook happened and magazines were on the block, and we thought that was just so easy to do. So we did AR-15 and AK-47 magazines. And then we came back around to the lower receivers and got them in a pretty good place where they could do many hundreds of rounds before they showed any signs of real stress. And then the licenses came through in March, and we started prototyping handguns.
Right. I'm definitely excited about this technology. You know, if you're able to continue on this path, you know, what's going to be the next thing for you?
Well, you know, I'm interested in having this fight. So we're having a fight about what information control means. I'm interested in having the fight in the civil realm as well about what intellectual property means.
And that's a very good point. It's not just, you know, the right to manufacture. It's, you know, how are people going to react to this? You know, do I have to ask your permission, you know, to make X, Y, and Z in my garage?
I'm kind of optimistic. Yeah, call me naive. But I'm kind of optimistic we can start changing minds on what should be protected by property rights and what shouldn't. And I think 3D printing is a great way of opening up that conversation as well.
All right. Now, so you're in law school. I just want to ask you maybe a little bit of a personal question. So you're studying law. Where are you studying law at?
I'm studying law here at the University of Texas.
Okay.
Here in Austin.
And have you found that helps you anyway, maybe navigating the legal aspects of your situation?
I wouldn't recommend people go to law school right now because of job placement figures, but studying the law is very helpful. One, because it demystifies some of it to you. You think you live in a nation of laws, but this is a fiction. It's mostly politics, and it's mostly social administrative legislation where they try to find
these excuses. It's not laws, it's politics.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
They try to explain away what they're doing, you know, put it in some cubbyhole that has legally been invented. This is good. That's healthy for you. And at the same time, it does help you read criminal statutes. It does help you learn about contracts. I mean, it's worth doing. It's worth studying. But at the same time, it doesn't have the efficacy many people think that it might.
And let me ask you this last question. We talked on, you know, the group saying that I don't want this technology out. Inevitably, let's say this technology is able to continue, right? And 3D printers become cheaper and more available. You know, there's the notion that maybe someday there's going to be some kid who makes one of these printers,
yeah,
you know, in his garage.
Oh, you mean the gun?
Yeah, makes one of these guns in his garage. Do you have any feelings about that? I mean, let's say some kid accidentally shoots himself with one of these things that he made himself.
I just don't think that we're raising new questions, honestly. And one, I think a kid can still make a zip gun easier than a 3D printed gun, especially, like, so this kid that kills himself will probably be middle class or upper middle class because 3D printers are expensive right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, fast forward, okay, these questions are going to be asked, but I just don't think they're essentially new ones.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think 3D printing somehow changed the responses to those questions. And so I really don't want to act like this is the first time this has ever happened.
No, it's happened, you know, plenty of times before.
Yeah, but I guess that is a dodge of your question, though. What I'm more concerned about is that 3D printing won't develop as a technology. It won't get cheaper. It won't be adopted because there's so many interest groups who have their own little corner of it staked out that they say, well, you know, everything else, sure, but, you know, we really need to protect design patents, utility patents. It's probably dangerous for you to make low receivers, magazines, and handguns for yourself. So let's put that off as well. And you know what? Like, while we're at it, we really should, like, we shouldn't make medical devices. That's really more for the FDA. So what can these things make? Why would you adopt them if every interest group has its own share of what you can do with your property?
Cody Wilson, your final thoughts?
I think information will be free, and it wants to be.
Awesome. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, man.
Really appreciate you coming in. Good luck on your technologies.
Thanks, man.
And it's technologies, advances like this that get me excited. You guys can see I was really excited in that interview. And people say, well, you like printable guns, but you don't like drones. It's not that I don't like drones. I don't like the way drones are being used when they carpet bomb a wedding party full of 100 people to kill one guy, when they kill little kids, then say, oh, no, that was a dog. That's the things I don't like about drones. I think drones could be great for search and rescue missions, putting out forest fires, things like that, but not to bomb people and definitely not use Pakistanis as a beta test to perfect your weaponry. So definitely interested in seeing what advances the printable guns can make. So if you like this broadcast, and I say this all the time, if you want this broadcast to continue, go to prisonplanet.tv and get yourself a 15-day free trial. There's a lot of great stuff there. And that's it for the InfoWars Nightly News. Great job to the crew, and thanks to all of our guests, and we'll see you tomorrow night.